Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Believe in Bears. My name is Joe Christopoulos with my co-host Corey Wooten. But first, today's episode is presented by BetOnline.ag. BetOnline is back and it's better than ever because a new web interface for the rest of the NBA season means more props, odds, and lines than ever before. And that's what makes BetOnline your number one spot for basketball and football action this season. So what are you waiting for? Head on your mobile device and sign up today. Receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit when you use promo code BELIEVE50. BLEAV50. Receive that bonus. Basketball, football, NHL, boxing, UFC, you name it, favorite Vegas casino games, they got it. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season, because at BetOnline, it's the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for coming into the pod. It is week 14. It's a Bears-Packers week. Two teams going in two different directions, but we just got some good news down the pipe in terms of who's going to be starting at quarterback. But first, let's bring in my co-host, former Bears defensive end, Fox 32 Chicago's, and suddenly in the Midwest, tempered weather, 65, 70 degrees, a man who might be on the links before we know it. It's Corey Wooten. What's up, Corey?
Oh, what's going on, man? I'm enjoying this weather. It's almost like I'm in Cali and you're out here. You know what I mean?
So,
hey, the weather's been real nice around here. It's very golf friendly. That's why everyone always says, man, put your clubs away in December. Not so fast, because we have days like this. And the next week is supposed to be 60s. So,
wow.
I'm loving it.
Someone wrote a letter to Santa, Corey, and your answers have been, and your prayers have been answered. And yeah, man, it's warmer in the STL than it is in LA right now. So good on you. And we're heading into a Bears-Packers game at Lambeau Field this week. Look, not a lot to play for in the wins and losses column, but we're playing for pride at this point, and there is some business to take care of. So let's hit it right away. Wednesday's practice report just came out as we're recording this right now. It's Wednesday afternoon. We've got Andy Dalton did not practice with the left hand. Travis Gibson out with an illness. We'll see what happens there. Cairo Santos also out with an illness. Definitely something to monitor as well. A little surprise in the injury report was David Montgomery. Shoulder, groin, glute. Corey, I don't know if you've ever had that triple combo before, but that doesn't sound like a lot of fun. And then finally, the most important one, obviously Hakeem Hicks, Allen Robinson limited, Damian Williams limited. But the most important one is Justin Fields practiced in full and fully announced as the starter against Green Bay, Sunday Night Football, under the bright lights. Corey, I'm kind of getting really excited again. I'm excited to see number one back on the field. How about you?
Yeah, I'm getting excited. I'm just hoping the game plan is like we hope it is, right? I hope it's a run-heavy first play calling, you know, setting up the play action, getting him comfortable, you know, kind of like what we saw in the second half of the Pittsburgh game, kind of like what we saw with the first Detroit game when he did really well. I'm just hoping they can continue that plan because, you know, when we try to get a little pass happy at times, it goes sideways, even with Andy Dalton, who they felt comfortable with. I think you just need to script for success. And at this point, you know, we had talked about this in the last pod, that it's really not about stacking wins at this point. It's about getting Justin Fields comfortable because the future is bright with him and we just have to get his confidence up. And I think you hit the nail on the head. If we could go out these last, you know, four or five games and really set a statement, you know, and have Justin Fields perform well, you know, leave the fan base feeling reinvigorated for next season, excited for what he has to offer. And obviously we know there's going to be changes, but really have this fan base excited because, you know, Chicago Bears fans are diehard regardless. But if we can do that going into the offseason, yeah, I think it would be huge, not only for Justin Fields' confidence coming into next season, right? Because the biggest growth you see with quarterbacks usually is year one to year two, and I'm really excited for that.
That's cool. That's an interesting perspective there on the one year to 2 year jump. Corey, I hope you appreciate this because this is what something your old ball coach used to say, Lovie Smith. I'm cutting this into quarters, right? We're cutting the season into quarters. So officially, this is the last game of the season for me, Corey, because after that, it does open up that four-game window, which is a brand new season, where we could hopefully look at this team with some fresh eyes and say, hey, maybe we can walk into this offseason with, you know, a little bit of motivation and also a little bit of optimism from a Bears fan's perspective. So, Corey, are you telling me that, let's just say, you know, Aaron Rodgers gets the ball in the first quarter and, rips us down the field for a six-play, 78-yard drive and goes up 7-0. Are you saying that the Bears shouldn't panic and not get pass-heavy and maybe stick to the game plan? Is that what you're intimating here?
That's what I'm saying. You know, at that point, it's only a one-score game, so you're still in it. You know, don't panic. Don't hit the panic button yet. So run the football. You have three talented backs. I guess we'll see, you know, as the week goes on, if Montgomery will play or not. I imagine he will. You know, I think he's really trying to prove that he's worthy of an extension. I think he's playing for an extension, even though that might not work out the way he wants to. But I think he's, you know, trying to prove himself, because anytime he's out there, Khalil Herbert to shine, Damian Williams to shine. So, you know, it's kind of like that thing. You don't want to miss something. So I think if he's feeling pretty good, I think he's going to get ready to go. But I think you have to run the football, especially when you're playing against a guy like Aaron Rodgers. In my opinion, you know, one of the best quarterbacks in the league, you have to keep him off the field. How do you do that? You start with the running game, right? And then how do you get Justin Fields comfortable? You start with that running game, right? You set it up, you have play actions, you got Booch, you have sprint outs, different things you can do to kind of combat that and get his confidence up.
So, Corey, before we're going to hop into your keys to what it will take for the Bears to upset the Packers, who I believe are 12.5-point favorites heading into this Week 14 matchup. My first question for you, though, is I was thinking about this heading into the week, and, you know, you hear from a lot of really smart people out there that talk about when Tom Brady, the way to get to Tom Brady sometimes is obviously pressure, but it's kind of in-his-face pressure. It's that interior, up the gut, put it in his face, kind of limit his clock so he's got to make quicker decisions, or maybe a decision that he doesn't want to make in that time. In terms of Aaron Rodgers, my biggest fear in this game is when Aaron Rodgers is on the run, rolling out, improvising, finding Robert Tonyan, or having a situation where Davante Adams gets 4.5 seconds to either spring loose or get open. So in your opinion, in terms of Aaron Rodgers, are you a guy that wants to bring that pressure into his face? Or are you more trying to get that contain on the edge there and maybe trying to get him from behind?
Yeah, from the game plan that I had last time, and I think this is every week against Aaron Rodgers, and this is something that Lovey, Rod Marinelli stressed when I was playing for the Bears, you know, because I played that left defensive end. It was always set the edge on the defense's left side, Aaron Rodgers' right side, because he loves to scramble to his right. And if you could set the edge, set that contain, you know, he's proven that if you can keep him in the pocket, that's when he does struggle. Contain him in the putt. He's actually, you know, more efficient on the run, and it baffles me, because most quarterbacks are not that case, but Aaron Rodgers is absolutely unbelievable when he's on the run. So whoever that left end is, you know, hopefully it's Gibson. If he could set that edge on that left side and then keep Aaron Rodgers in the pocket, that's when he's shown that he struggles. So, you know, most people, like you said, it's up the gut pressure. But for him, you know, it's keeping him contained in the pocket, because he likes to get out. He kind of has a little bit of happy feet at times. He's kind of, you know, wants to get out of that pocket. That's where he feels most comfortable. So if you could set the edge with him, and I made the mistake back in 2012 where we had the game pretty close at home in December. And, you know, I had 2 sacks in the game. You know, I probably could have had another one if I just followed what Rob Marinelli had told me, you know, set the edge and let it go. And there was a blitz, right, up the gut. And all week he had been stressing, listen, do not rush the same way you normally would. Just set the edge. Just run to the level of the quarterback and you will have a sack. But instead, I tried to hit a move on the right tackle and I got stuck on him. And Aaron Rodgers just hit the corner on me. And then he hit Randall Cobb for like a 60-yard gain. And I just remember running over to the sidelines and he was just like, what the? I can't even say it on air right now. But he chewed me out. But that's the thing. If you just be smart, if you don't try to win your rushes, if you just set the edge, you can be successful against a guy like Rodgers. Because early on, we had a really good game plan. You know, I had 2 sacks in the game. Julius Peppers had 2 sacks. Izzy Adonijé had another sack. So we really were able to get after him. It was just kind of in that second half, you know, that play really sparked him. Because the thing is, he struggled before that. But once he got on the move and completed that 60-yard throw on the run, that's when he started to get the confidence up, and then they scored like 2 or 3 consecutive times on us. So that's why you need to keep him inside that pocket.
And some of the like memories that I have from that defense that you played on back in the day was also this concept of you had these situations where early in the game, Aaron Rodgers, if he didn't like what he saw, he would chuck it out of bounds, which was me feeling like you guys would have a huge win on that particular play of, I don't like what I see. I'm in this pocket a little too long and I can't escape. So he would chuck it out of bounds and like live to play another day because he's smart. But again, that goes for a win for the Chicago Bears defense. Real quick, man, I got to ask you because, you know, after a Bears game, I kind of sift around Twitter. I watch a lot of different stuff. I try and do some post game and just kind of get a feel for other people's perspectives and emotions. And I sometimes watch that NBC Sports Chicago one on Twitter, and I see Alex Brown. Did you play with Alex Brown?
No.
So yeah, that was the Chips passing in the night. Yeah, but you played with Briggs, yeah. Right?
Yep. I played.
Yeah, so you played with Briggs, and dude, I swear it's just uncanny that they talk about Rod Marinelli as often as you bring up Rod Marinelli. So yeah. Can you, for the listeners, just kind of walk us through just what Rod Marinelli meant for not just your career, but that Bears defense? Because it seems like, to a man, everyone speaks so highly about him and still remembers some of the principles and teachings that he taught way back when.
Yeah, I think Rod Marinelli reminds me a lot of Vic Fangio. I think some of the current Bears players probably hold Vic Fangio in that same regard. You know, I just think the fact that he was so attention to detail and discipline, I think those are the similarities I see between Vic Fangio and Rod Marinelli. They really stressed the importance of discipline. Like, everybody has a gap, everybody has an assignment, and it was all about trust, right? Urlacher and Briggs were trusting that I was going to be in the right spot, or that Julius Peppers or Henry Melton, Stephen Pius. So as everybody had the trust that we were going to do exactly what we were going to do. And the whole Russian cover philosophy, I think, you know, everybody bought into that, right? As a defensive lineman, you love getting off the football, right? I look back at college and some other times, like, we did read step, we did other kinds of attacking styles, but it wasn't like that. Like, literally getting off the football was everything. And when you have a defensive line coach telling you to get off, like, oh no, you're slow. Like, in practice, all we worked was get off. Like, and if we were a split second late, you know, he'd call us out every time. You're slow. So it was just so ingrained of us to get off the football. And I don't know if you remember that 2012 season when we were one of the best defenses in the history of the NFL. It just seemed like every time
started what, 6-1, right?
7-1.
7-1. Thank you. Yeah.
Yep. And then, you know, we were 10-6 and the Lovey got fired. But yeah, that year was unbelievable because, you know, if you just put on the tape of our front four, we just got off the football. You know, you look at a guy like Henry Melton, he had his Pro Bowl season. Julius Peppers had a Pro Bowl season. I had 7 sacks that year. Adonijé, I think, had 7 sacks as well. So we just had such a good rotation, and it came down to getting off the football. So, and I think the players just really loved a guy like Rod Marinelli. Like, you'd run through a wall for him. And that's why you see Lance Briggs and Alex Brown talking about the same kind of stories, bringing him, because he's like one of those gurus, you know, like that equivalent to a Vic Fangio for the modern day people, you know, the Bears fans. You know, people really bought into what he did, and they would run through a wall for him. And the crazy thing is 2012, right? That was the year we had Marinelli and Lovey. Then Lovey was fired with Marinelli the next year. 2013, we had Mel Tucker, who's now at Michigan State, tried to run the same exact defense, pretty much had the same personnel with the exception of Brian Urlacher. And we went from top 5 defense to dead last. So I think that tells you everything you need to know about coaching staff. Because you look at the Bears, same situation with Vic Fangio, right? When he left, right, then we had Chuck Pagano, right? And we were still okay, you know. And then, you know, now we have Sean Desai, and the defense has kind of gone downhill since Vic Fangio's gone. I think that's what you saw with the Bears for a while, you know, after Rod Marinelli and company. We were trying to figure things out. But – you know, I think people underestimate how important it is to have a defensive coordinator like a Rod Marinelli, like a Vic Fangio, and stay. And that sets the blueprint of the defense.
Yeah, I love hearing that because, one, I just think it's really cool that all of you guys, all you former NFLers that were under Marinelli, still speak so highly of him. And when a teacher passes something on to a student for the student to still remember it years later, that's the whole process, man. That's when you know that it really works. And I also remember that you're providing interesting insight of, I'm sure Chuck Pagano, I think I'm pretty positive Chuck Pagano is a great man, and I'm pretty sure he's a pretty damn good coach. I also remember when he came in, he was like, I don't want to change anything about Fangio's defense, which was kind of sort of a move to appeal towards the players. When I'm sort of thinking now moving forward, I don't know about changing, but I think it was about challenging, right? Like, I want to come in and take those things and continue to challenge you and keep, you know, whatever it is, iron sharpens iron, whatever you want to put it out there. And maybe that was something that added to complacency, might not be the right word, but that slow slip that we've seen since 2018 to probably where we are now. Maybe that's kind of a product of that. I'm not sure.
I think the thing is like this. Every coordinator has their own scheme, and they need to run their own scheme. I don't think you should try to copy anybody else's. You know, I think that's when stuff kind of goes awry and defenses struggle because, you know, you were brought in to run your specific type of defense. Oh, well, I don't want to change it. I want to do this, but it never works out the same. And you could try to copy something, you know, but it never exactly works out the same. We countless examples in the league where everybody said, oh, we're going to keep this the same. And then, you know, that example from 2012 to 2013 just blows my mind because we had the same personnel, like literally, like, it just baffled me, you know, and trying to keep something same, but there was stuff that was off, right? Remember how I told you that 2013 game, when we played the Packers, this was to make or break to get into the playoffs at that point. And it was the final game of the season, 2013. And there was a fumble on the field, right? And we should have picked up the ball, but we did not. And that's something that would have never happened with Lovey and Marinelli, just because we stressed scoop and score, pick up every ball, you know, leave no stone unturned, like treat every play, every ball on the ground like it's a fumble, a loose ball. We were just so ingrained with that. And we weren't ingrained the same way, you know, with Mel Tucker. And that's no disrespect to him or anything, but it's just differences. It's the little details that make the difference. That's why we were a top five defense, you know, setting certain records in the NFL about takeaways, this, that, and the other, to going to the next year being dead last. And it's those little details, you know, discipline, things like that, that add up and make the difference in this league.
And look, like a lot of things in life, I think it's fair to criticize Mel Tucker for back then at that time, because look at what he's done now. Like, you know, we all come through this life at different points, right? And I think the lessons that he learned in Chicago is probably what makes him the coach that's now getting that long-term extension at Michigan State, right?
Exactly.
And the evolution through time, you know, obviously that's sometimes the bumps in the road. Sometimes they conflict with your football team and the football team that you love, and you end up being like, get out of here. You know, who's to say what – I mean, let's be real. Who's to say what happens to Matt Nagy the next 5 or 10 years and whether he can apply some of the lessons that he's learned, or more importantly, the missteps that he's had with this Bears team, and maybe apply them somewhere down the road and actually – I don't know if he gets another head coaching job, but maybe apply it to a coordinator's job moving forward. But, Corey, here's the important thing, man. We got to get to some of the keys to a Bears victory. If the Bears are going to upset the Packers – in week 14, you know, hit us off a little bit. We're just going to do a couple of these, and then we're going to do a little story time, so stick around to the end of the pod. Yeah. I want to hear a couple stories with Corey here.
So I think first and foremost is limit the turnovers, right? You look at Green Bay, of all the offenses in the league, they play a pretty perfect offense, you know, when you talk about limiting turnovers. And, you know, you look at Aaron Rodgers, he has 23 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, and 2 of those picks were in the first game of the season. I think that tells you everything you need to know. So we have to limit the turnovers. That's kind of been the issue with us as an offense. You look at last game with four interceptions right there. Justin Fields at times has thrown interceptions. But how do we do that, right? And I think, you know, this kind of ties in to two different keys. You know, I think running the football, that's my key every week. But you limit turnovers by running the football, right? You get it established, right? And especially the weather's getting colder. You're trying to keep Aaron Rodgers off the field. You run the football. Then you have a young quarterback in Justin Fields. You're trying to get him confident. You establish the running game. And, you know, at times I feel like the Bears coordinators, they get away from the running game. And I think it should be your best friend, especially you have 3 talented backs, you know, Montgomery, Khalil Herbert, Damian Williams. Utilize them, you know. Especially maybe if David Montgomery's not in there, you have Khalil Herbert that can step in and not miss a beat at all. So I think you have options over there, and we're trying to get Justin Fields comfortable, right? You're trying to get him in a situation where he looked like in that Pittsburgh second half. How did you do that? You got the running game going. Same thing with Detroit. And I think when he gets those hard play actions, how do you set that up? Off the running game. So I think we really need to establish that running game. That's my key every week, but, you know, especially keeping Aaron Rodgers off the field, gotta run the football. So yeah, that's kind of 2 keys in there, but yeah, that's kind of my same every week, you know, limit the turnovers, getting that run game going. Because the Bears, we can run the football. It just seems like at times, you know, I told you, we need to be a 60-40 until we can get Justin Fields comfortable. Then you could kind of, you know, 50-50. Then you can maybe go 60-40, leaning to pass when he gets comfortable. But for right now, 60-40, run heavy.
You're not saying a 46-3 like the Patriots just did?
No.
That was crazy, Corey.
Right? hey, I mean, it won them the game, you know?
It sure did, man.
I don't understand. Like, it doesn't matter. Bill Belichick doesn't worry about anybody else. And I wish more coaches.
He doesn't give a rip what happened.
I know. Right? I wish more coaches felt the same way he did. Like, because everyone's always like, well, what if this? What? No, he's like, listen, we won the game, and that's what matters, right? It doesn't matter that Mac Jones didn't have the throws down the field. Or we won the game, yeah, and that's what matters.
And Corey is a former player, man. They play each other again in 2 weeks. What kind of film do the – what kind of tape do the Bills look at, right? Like, yeah. what exactly do they look at and say, away from this game and put it into the next one? They have no idea. It's a clean thing all over again.
And that's why Bill Belichick owns the Bills. Like, it just, you know, like, year in and year out, it doesn't matter. And I just love that about him, right? Because, like I said earlier, I think too many coaches worry about everything on the outside, right? When the only thing that should matter is what is the best game plan to win the game, right? Because wins and losses are what matters about this league, right? Stats don't matter, right? How many times you threw touchdowns or how many yards you threw for, because that looks all cute and fancy and all this. But at the end of the day, right, when there's a Super Bowl winner, it's a win or a loss. And that's all that matters. So you could play, you know, smash mouth football that's not pretty, this, that, and the other. But if it gets you a win, why does it matter? You know, it shouldn't.
Is there a Dean Ice in the house? Is there a Dean Ice? No, you're completely right, man. And if I can maybe piggyback off of your key, because one of the things that I'm really interested in, and Bears fans, I think we should really cue in on this, and I think you can kind of tell the difference of which way goes the other, is I think we've done a really nice job at the first 15, right? The first 15 plays, the first drive of Justin Fields, I thought have been pretty crisp. He's been efficient. We've done some things, I think, at times, as you mentioned, sprint outs, get him on the move a little bit, move it a little side to side. But then after that, when it's time for either Fields or the coaching staff to make an adjustment based off that 15, we've really struggled. And then all of a sudden we end up the first half and we don't have a lot of production and we're asking ourselves questions. So I'm really curious to see where they go with that, right? Like, and I think we'll probably be able to tell, right, Corey? Like, if Justin Fields is inaccurate on a few throws, we'll be able to read that very easily as Bears fans and analysts. But after that first 15 plays of the first couple of drives, I want to really key in and see what kind of play calls they dial up, because that's when I'm going to really ask myself the question, is the coaching staff doing the right thing by Fields? Because, again, that's been, I think, another issue and why we struggled to score points in the first half, and that's what I want to see for one of the keys.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more. And I think that's what comes down to it. That's why this coaching staff is not going to be here next year, because of their lack of game planning, you know, and adjustments. I think you hit the nail on the head. The first 15 are usually do well. And then after that, you know, taking what the defense gives you, they kind of struggle with. And I think, you know, in this situation where they're trying to figure out, you know, Matt Nagy was trying to figure himself out as a game caller, play caller, you know, who's struggling, you got to run the football. You know, I think that's ultimately what it comes down to. And I think that's how you get in the rhythms and flows of a game is establishing that run. And I told you, as a defensive lineman, it is so demoralizing when a team could just run the football on you for 3 yards, 4 yards, 5 yards a pop. And then all of a sudden they put in that play action there and it really takes you off balance. So that's why I really don't understand why they do not just be a run heavy team, have more pro style sets. What I love, you know, when we're trying to protect the tackles at this point, right? It disguises the pass more so you can do both. But I think, you know, when you have two tight ends, you got a guy like Cole Kmet that can block, Jimmy Graham that can block. You got three talented backs. It just baffles me why you're not giving them the workload in a game, you know, and at times, you know, Andy Dalton was throwing the ball 40 something times. David Montgomery had 12 carries one of the games, and it just baffled me. So I think for that reason, these coaches and won't be here next year. And you know, I just hope whoever is the next in line for the Bears job and coordinating job is a true game plan master that's able to, you know, make adjustments, have a great game plan, really cater to a young quarterback in Justin Fields.
Let's take a quick break to talk about our brand new sponsor, Lightbox. I got news for everybody. Say goodbye to dull gifts. Lightbox lab-grown diamonds are the brightest gift of the year. Listing cutting-edge technology and innovative techniques, they've cracked the science of sparkle, creating the highest quality lab-grown diamonds you can find at a very light price, only $800 per carat. They have the same chemical makeup of natural diamonds, but are just grown in a lab. Because of their process, they can create stones in plush pink and beautiful blue, as well as classic white. Lightbox lab-grown diamonds are the gift they'll never want to take off price, so they won't have to. They really do make any outfit sparkle. So visit lightboxjewelry.com right now to add sparkle to your holiday shopping. That's lightboxjewelry.com. Lightbox diamonds, never a dull moment. Now back to the pod. And Corey, let me ask you a question. This is a learning question for me, because I mean, this is something, first of all, this is something that I do in Madden, so you can tell me whether it applies to actual real football in real life. But my whole thing is that when you run the ball, and hopefully this hammers home why you are such a big proponent of making that the first and foremost core principle of this offense. When you run the ball 4, 5, 6 times, right, aren't you able to learn a lot? Like, you learn where the gap fits are with these linebackers. You learn who is blitzing, who isn't blitzing, who's maybe shading to the left or to the right. So, for example, if you have a middle linebacker, and after 4, 5, 6 plays of running the ball, you kind of get the idea of where he's supposed to be, and then you can exploit that with tight end space. And
yep.
Isn't that the whole idea of, like, learning the little gaps and stuff? Because if you're just passing with these different routes all the time, it kind of feels it can be a little bit more of a grab bag, and that's when a defense can trick you by doing nickel blitz and other kinds of stuff.
Exactly. Why do you think our defense has really struggled this season? Because we haven't been able to stop the run. Teams have said it from the beginning in their game plan. Hey, we're going to run the football on the Bears. And remember, I talked about gap discipline. That's been the biggest issue. So, right, you're testing out a team's gap discipline when you're establishing that run. You're trying to get it going, right? And that's why a lot of teams, you know, the first two drives, if you can really stuff the run, then a lot of times they abandon it, right? Because like, oh, they're gap discipline. They're really stuffing the run. And then as a defensive lineman, you love that, because then you can pin your ears back. You know what they're going to do at that point. They're like, oh, we cannot run the football on them. You know, we have to pass the ball. And then, you know, they get in gun, and then, you know, the tackles don't disguise their kick sets, and you love that. So that's what you want to do. But, you know, I think the running game just really keeps a team honest. And that's why defensively we haven't been able to, you know, in certain situations really get after the passer. You know, first and second we've been pretty good, but in third downs, you know, we really haven't, because teams have been running the football on us. And what does that do? That tires out your pass rush. So you have some of your top pass rushers in there that have been playing the run consistently, and then they've had multiple first downs, and then you're a situation on third and medium and long, and you're expecting them to get off the ball, and they don't have that same burst that they did earlier on in the game. So,
and look, man, maybe to put a final button on it before we get another key to a Bears victory, is I just want to get this out there too, as well, that I think the narrative of the last 3 or 4 years of the NFL is that it's a passing league. This is the modern NFL. It's a passing league. And I just want to slow people down on that. And I want to keep people in the present moment of specifically this season, because if you look around this league, I get it. Yes, of course it is a predominantly passing oriented league. And we were playing a guy named Aaron Rodgers, who we're going to see a lot of passes from this season. But in terms of the rest of the league, look around, everybody. Like, Derek Carr is leading the NFL in passing yards, right? Patrick Mahomes isn't having the greatest season in the world. Why? Because they don't have a great running game, because Edwards-Helaire has been on the IR. We've mentioned the Buccaneers over the past couple of weeks. Look what happened to the Tennessee Titans when Derrick Henry went down. I mean, the list goes really on and on. The Dallas Cowboys. Oh, the world-beating Dallas Cowboys the first months of the season. Well, guess what? Zeke has a banged-up knee, and as good as Tony Pollard is as a change of pace, if they don't have that up-the-middle action, all of a sudden CeeDee Lamb and all these other receivers and Dak Prescott don't look that amazing. Mm-hmm. So go around the league right now, and if you'll and the Arizona Cardinals, who do we play last week? James Conner with a dozen touchdowns. If you find any team that's over 500 fighting for a playoff spot right now, you're going to see a team that in some way or some fashion, you know, Bills, Ravens with their quarterbacks, they run the football, dude. You know what I mean? Like, this is old school, like, grind it out stuff. This is what the NFL is really right now. And my final one real quick is, has there been an adjustment? Because that's what NFL is. It goes in cycles. We've been saying passing league, passing league, passing league, passing league. And I saw a stat about how some of the defensive players have gotten lighter. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, at a middle linebacker, you don't have to be 250, 260. You can play it now at 230. So isn't this kind of like just the NFL sort of switching now of, like, running maybe the way to win football games with the way that defenses are now catering to its pass? Does that make any sense?
Yeah. No, I think there has been a shift. I think what you have been seeing, right? You look at a guy like Ryan Tannehill, right? He came from Miami, really struggled over there, had maybe one good season. And then he goes to Tennessee, and he has this resurgence of his career, right? And everyone's like, oh, my goodness, why? Well, Derrick Henry. That's the reason why. Yeah. And I think people realize that every team that's kind of had a quarterback that was maybe struggling at one point in time that's now balling out, it's because of the running game, right? It takes the pressure off the quarterback. And that's what I've been saying week in and week out with the Bears, you know, with Justin Fields, young guy trying to get his confidence up. The running game, you know. And then you mentioned Patrick Mahomes, right? They've kind of been up and down this season because of their lack of running game. It's not because Patrick Mahomes isn't a good quarterback, but like I said, there's only a few quarterbacks in this league that can really carry a team without a run game. And one of the guys is the guy we're playing this week in Aaron Rodgers. I mean, he did it for years.
He's the exception to the point I'm trying to make.
To the rule, right? Yeah, that's the exception, right? Most teams out there, they cannot survive without a running game. And look at this year with Green Bay. They're really getting the running game going. The stats haven't wooed and wowed you, but, you know, Dylan and Aaron Jones have really put some good numbers together as a 1-2 punch, something that Aaron Rodgers really hasn't had in the past. That's why, you know, this season for Green Bay, I mean, I expect them to go pretty far just because they're playing really good defense. They're running the football well this year. And Aaron Rodgers, as always, doesn't turn the ball over. So I think that's a recipe, you know, when you look at the top teams in the NFC, you know, you look at, you know, Green Bay, you look at Tampa Bay, you know, you look at Arizona that we Dallas, played Arizona, as well, and the Rams.
Rams, but Daryl Henderson got hurt.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't believe in the Rams, but I think, you know, Tampa Bay and Green Bay, I think those are going to be the two teams at the end, possibly in the NFC Championship. You know, and I think it comes down to that running game because they're running the ball really well, both teams right now. And that's how you make a long playoff run and a Super Bowl run is with that running game.
Corey, any more keys to hopefully a Bears upset against the Packers in week 14?
Yeah, I mean, you look at the stats. The stats don't lie. You know, Aaron Rodgers to Devontae Adams, you have to stop Devontae Adams. You know, in the games that, you know, they've lost and Aaron Rodgers hasn't done well in that first game of the season, you limit Devontae Adams. I mean, he has 1,000 yards. The next leading receiver is Randall Cobb. He has 300 and some change. So I think that tells you everything you need to know. It's not very balanced when it comes to the wide receiver position. So if you can limit, you know, Devontae Adams' production, and I wouldn't mind double covering him in situations. You know, I think this is a game where, hey, you know, this game really isn't for anything but your pride. And, you know, if you take number one option, one of the best receivers in the game, there's no shame in that. I'd rather have somebody else beat me at that point. I'd rather have an aging Randall Cobb, you know, Allen Lazard beat me rather than, you know, Devontae Adams, because he's a game breaker. And you look at the last game that we played against the Packers. It was a really close game. And then Devontae Adams had that long pass that set up the touchdown where Aaron Rodgers said, I own you, Chicago, when he scrambled. But I think if you can contain him, we could have a lot more success. I don't know if we're going to win the game, but I think we have a better chance to win the game if we can contain Devontae Adams.
Yeah, and maybe my final key is, you know, I don't want to sound too simplistic about this, but I want us to try and attempt to keep it close somehow. And however means that is. Now, whether that means maybe holding them to a field goal in the red zone, maybe that is what you're talking about, the turnovers. It definitely is what you're talking about in terms of running the ball and time of possession, because I would really love nothing more than the Bears to be down 7 or less points in the fourth quarter with Justin Fields and have the ball in his hands. I heard a little bit of the press conference quotes today. Again, I love what Justin Fields says at press conferences. He's really cool, too, where, like, if someone asks kind of a dumb question, he'll just respectfully give you a short answer. But if you ask an interesting question, he will give a very thoughtful response. And today he was like, you know what? I love being the underdog. I thrive on it. I want it. Give it to me. Let's go. And this is a true underdog situation for Justin Fields. And I'm excited that he's going to be back on the field. And I just want the game to be close, man, because I kind of feel like, I'm not saying our defense is going to hold up, but I kind of feel like if it's close in the fourth quarter, I feel like our rookie quarterback can put together a drive and give us something to cheer about, albeit for maybe a minute or two before we hand it back over to Aaron Rodgers and we'll see what happens. But if we can somehow keep this kind of close and not make it a laugher, and it's not 37-13 with 4 minutes in the third quarter, if we can somehow do a little bit similar to what we had last time, I don't know, 20-14, something like that, maybe a 23-16, get it in the rookie's hands, I think it could be kind of an exciting finish, whether we win or lose. And I just want to see that because, again, to your point, we want to see moments and progress. It isn't really about wins and losses anymore.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Honest opinion, what do you think the final score is going to be in this game?
I'm terrified. I'm thinking they get at least 32. So to be kind of on the generous side, I was thinking somewhere along the lines of like 34-21. Mm-hmm. The 21, probably one of those touchdowns comes later in the game. Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's not because I don't think Justin Fields is going to perform poorly. It has more to do with, I think, and we've seen this, it's a tale as old as time. Rodgers comes down, first two drives, touchdown plus field goal or touchdown plus touchdown. We're down 10-0, 14-0 with maybe 6 or 5 minutes to go in the first quarter. And we panic. And the play calling starts looking real different. And we start doing these deep routes, these deep steps, and we're asking a lot of our rookie quarterback and our offensive line a couple three and outs later, and the game can get out of hand really quickly. And I don't think our coaching staff is equipped to handle that kind of adversity, especially when Aaron Rodgers is coming at you. And that's my fear right now. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I'm thinking this is going to be a blowout, you know, in my opinion. I think Green Bay plays really good at home. I think they're really starting to hit their stride offensively. Aaron Rodgers looked really good. You know, defense is playing really well. You look at a guy like Rashawn Gary, who's really stepped up this year in his third year with Za'Darius Smith out. He's their leading sack artist this year. You look at Kenny Clark in the middle. He's been really impressive. Last game, he had 2 sacks against the Bears. I mean, he looked impressive in there. And then you look at how they're running the football right now, Green Bay. You know, this is a game I worry about that it gets out of hand early. Kind of similar to how the Arizona Cardinals game was at first. It was looking like it was going to be a blowout. I think it's going to be along those lines, in my opinion. I just worry about the game planning. You know, I think Justin Fields has the talent. I just don't think these coaches know how to game plan for him. And I think they panic when someone goes up 7-0 or 14-0 in the first half, first quarter. I think they have to get pass happy, and you should do the opposite, especially when it's still in the first quarter, you know, or first half rather. So I really worry about that. I'm just hoping that we can run the football and just time possession, you know, in this game. I mean, I think that would be a win if we could keep it close to a 1-score, 2-score game. But in my opinion, I think it's going to be a 34-14 or 17 type of game.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And it's so funny, man. I'm right on board with you because the whole concept, in my opinion, is when you go down 14-0, there's something intrinsically already in there that says, look, we're having problems in this, that, and the other area. Shorten the game. Run the ball. Exactly. Shorten the game. Do what you do. Keep it. Control what you can control in life. And by doing that is possessing the football. And we do that over and over and over again. And what's funny about that, Corey, is if we're both, you know, we're both picking the Bears to lose, which might keep us tied heading into this 4-game stretch, Corey, a battle royale of me and you and our game picks to see who will win this season's Believe. Before we get out of here, man, we teased it in the last pod, and I want to hear it. I want to hear, let's do some stories with Corey. Some Corey stories.
All right.
You know, take us back, you know, to the playing days. You know, maybe bring us in, tell us a Lambeau Field story if you got it, maybe something in, you know, the locker room, something happened in the Green Bay bar. I don't even care, man. You have the floor, man. Take us behind the curtain.
Yeah, so I'll do it to 2013. That was the only time when I was there where we beat the we beat Green Bay. Or actually in 2011, did we beat them at Green Bay? I think with Josh McCown, right? Didn't we?
Oh, wow. Oh, so wait, McCown would be with Trestman, right?
Oh shoot! Yes, 2013.
Yeah, so I don't think it was. I don't think it was 11 because 11,
yeah, so it was 13.
11 was the Green Bay Jamarcus Webb game where Cutler, Marcus Webb. That was not.
Yes, no, that wasn't that. That was 2013 with Josh McCown. I knew Josh McCown, but I had the years messed up. So 2013, that's the game where Shea McClellan had 3 sacks in the game. One of them, he broke Aaron Rodgers' collarbone, and then they were so mad. The O-line, they were trying to hit him after the play, every play, because they were so mad, because they thought that meant their season, right? Broken collarbone. I think it said 6 to 8 weeks at that point. And then we knew, you know, when he was out, you know, we never want anyone to get injured, but, you know, we had a good feeling about winning that game, especially at Green Bay Lambeau. Really hard place to play, because I feel like once they start scoring and the crowd gets into it, you know, a guy like Aaron Rodgers just really gets going. And he was getting going in that game, and then he had the collarbone.
Yeah, it was in the red. They were in the red zone, right?
Yeah, they were in the red zone. Yep. And then Seneca Wallace comes in, right, in that game. And he, you know, he's a guy that's been around and speedster. And, yeah, we end up going up. And then I remember the last drive that they had, you know, started off with that drive where I had the sack, and then I hit the Chappelle robot. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, yeah. That's
yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And then, yeah,
you did recently, did you not, last weekend, I think, with your buddy?
Oh, yeah. Yep. At the broadcasting, we did it. So we were interacting with the crowd, and my co-host, Gabe Ramirez, was like, yeah, do the robot. So I had to hit it real quick. But, yeah, that was one of my favorite sacks, because, you know, normally when you have a speedy quarterback, right, like Seneca Wallace, he ran a 4.4, speedy guy. And normally I would be nervous about trying to chase him. And I wasn't thinking about anything at all. And I just remember, you know, he tried to juke me. And it was like, you know, those videos you see of animals where you mirror them. And never in my life have I never been nervous to get a quarterback. I was just reacting. Literally, he went that way, I went that way. And literally I got him down, and it was like, I didn't think about it. Because if you think about it, when you're so open after you beat a offensive guy, and you have the quarterback right there, it's almost kind of like nervous. It's like one of those like catches in the end zone where you're wide open, like Marquise Goodwin had when Andy Dalton a few weeks ago, that wide open, you know, catch.
You remember he like kept like, like make sure that he brought that in.
That's normally how it is, you know, when you're going after a quarterback, when you just clearly beat the guy and you're just one-on-one, and you're like, oh my God, don't mess up. But I didn't even think about anything. I got him down, and I was so excited. I did the robot real quick, and I realized it was 2 minute, and then I rushed up to the line real quick, and everyone's like, man, what are you doing? It's 2 minute. You can't be celebrating with that. I was like, man, I got back. I was good. Yeah. So, you know, and then we ended up stopping him on that drive and won that game. And it felt good to win it at Lambeau, because that's something that I never did in my career with the Bears. And, you know, it's just honestly one of the best stadiums to play in, with all the history. And the fans are actually nice. You know, you go some places like Philly, and man, the fans are it's funny, man. I remember walking through the tunnel or walking out of the tunnel, and you see Philly fans like, hey, Wooten, why don't you go F yourself? Huh? And they're talking so much stuff. And I remember that game, my sister who lived in Philly, she was going to wear my jersey to the game. And I'm like, you know what? Don't even do it, because I feel like they're going to mess with you. And you know, they're the only stadium to have a holding cell. They have a jail in there because fans are too rowdy. So I told my sister, I was like, don't even wear the jersey. I was like, just wear something that's neutral. Don't wear anything.
That wasn't the 52-14 game.
Yes.
That was. Yes.
When Chip Kelly was there, I think, right?
Yeah, which set up the following week, that Packers game, the Randall Cobb game.
Exactly. You know, that was a little disheartening, because that week we had a chance to win the game and win the division just in that game right there. So, you know, it's unfortunate. That season was so up and down. You know, even how bad we played defensively, it's crazy that we still had a shot to win it in that week.
I remember that season.
17.
Wasn't it like you guys played the Bengals like the first game or something like that?
Yep.
And Jay comes out and he's like ripping it, and it's like the Trestman era, and it's like, man, this is it, greatest show on Soldier Field turf, like here we go. And I remember that game even got close too. Well, like that was a microcosm of the whole season, of like we literally thought like we're never gonna not stop scoring, like, and then that game got tighter.
It was the opposite that season, right? Because the season before, it was the offense really struggled, the defense really carried everything. And then 2013, you know, and Trestman's there, whole new defensive coordinator, but same scheme. And we just couldn't get things going. And we just thought if we could have had that same offense the year before, I really think we could have won the Super Bowl, because that, you know, JJ and the offense looked really well. It's just defensively, we sucked. We were awful. I mean, there's no way to sugarcoat it. I just don't understand, like, you know, Briggs ended up getting hurt. Peanut Tillman got hurt, you know, halfway through the season. So
it's the twilight of the locker.
Yeah, it was just a rough thing. But it was just a really weird season at 2013. And still, despite everything, we had a chance to win that game at Soldier Field against Aaron Rodgers, and we should have won it. And just so you know, that last play where Chris Conte got beat deep, I did get held. You can run back the tape. TJ Lang, my guy, I know him. I played him against college.
I heard there's like a...
Yes, there's a picture. He held the crap out of me. And I mean, it was like, literally, like my jersey's getting stretched beyond belief, you know? Like, luckily for the stretch technology, because it should have ripped. Yeah. I mean, it was unbelievable. And then Julius Peppers, I think he got held on that play as well. So it was this unfortunate situation. And they never want to call holding when it's you. They never do.
So for you and your experience in that Bears defense, I mean, it's fair to say, because obviously Bears, Packers, Bears fans get super into it, right? We look forward to it. But obviously going to Lambeau, staying in that neighborhood, you know what, like the stadium's literally in the middle of like a little suburban neighborhood, right? And the locker room, the whole mystique. And of course it's a division rival, but you can confirm, you know, you guys got up for that stuff. Like you knew that was coming. Bears Packers, real deal, maybe a little, just a touch of a different feel to that week.
Yeah, I don't think there's the better rivalry in football, in my opinion, you know, than Bears Packers, regardless of how lopsided it's been as of late. And since, you know, even Brett Favre was there, you know, I mean, Green Bay has had that series for a long time. But I think, you know, just the energy around it, like, you know, from the fans, you know, the week of the game. And I remember 2010, right, the year that Green Bay won the Super Bowl, right? We're in the NFC Championship against them. Green Bay Packers, Chicago Bears, rivalry game to get in the Super Bowl. This is my rookie year, too. And I'm thinking, man, we are going to go to the Super Bowl. We were rocking. We were rolling on all cylinders. And, you know, the game is close at one point. Urlacher gets a pick, gets tripped up by Aaron Rodgers. And then this is when Jay Cutler has the MCL sprain. He comes out of the game. We have Caleb Haney come in. And then Todd Collins first. He gets hurt. And then Caleb Haney comes in, I believe.
Oh, my God. I forgot about that. You're right.
Yeah.
Collins doesn't even, like, make it into that, the lore of that story. That's crazy.
Exactly. And then the dagger in that game was B.J. Raji having to pick six. And then he did the hula dance because he made the Pro Bowl in there. But, I mean, that game – like the energy in that stadium was unbelievable. And like, I'm a rookie, I'm playing in the game, I'm part of the rotation, about to make the Super Bowl, I think. And I was just thinking, like, you know, before the game, I'm like, who am I going to invite to the Super Bowl? You know, who's everybody I'm going to bring to the Super Bowl? You know, my first year, we're going to win the Super Bowl. But I've never had energy in a game like that one. I mean, the weather, like, talk about the ultimate, like, football game, you know, Bears Packers NFC Championship,
freezing cold,
stadiums rocking, you know, Packers fans, Bears fans, you know, the whole week leading up to it. I think it was like, you know, the ticket prices were unbelievable. I think they were saying, like, StubHub, it was like one of the highest resales ever. Like, they were going for like five times the price that they normally were. It was unbelievable. Like, everybody and their mother was trying to get a ticket, you know, and people, you know, in Chicago, hey, Corey, I know you probably got a lot of people coming to the game, but, you know, any chance you can get me some tickets? I'm like, nah, man, I took out the max.
A lot of people.
Yeah. So yeah, literally everybody and their mother was trying to get their hands on that ticket because it was unbelievable. You know, one game away from the Super Bowl, you know, I was just thinking about what it would be like, you know, for them to bring that stage out there, your NFC champs going to the Super Bowl, going to play the Steelers. Like, man, it would have been such an incredible feeling. But yeah, it's always tough going against a guy like Aaron Rodgers because he always gives them a chance every year. And you just always thought in your head, like, man, if we had Aaron Rodgers, you know, imagine what the Bears would have been able to do, you know? Like, he is one of those guys that, like, that's why it really baffles me why they had so much issues, you know, with them really not respecting him. I feel like, you know, I feel like they didn't truly respect him because a guy of his status and what he's proven, like, to not really try to draft his replacement, not tell him, you know, to try to not go to him or what options we need, you know, at wide receiver position or this, that, and the other. Really not consult with him like other quarterbacks do, you know, like a Tom Brady, stuff like that. So I think they kind of disrespected him. And, you know, in my opinion, I think they're going to try to make everything right and make him stay. And, oh, you once a Packer, always a Packer.
It's
but I think
towards him coming back now.
Exactly.
Than it was, what, 3-4 months ago. And if he wins the Super Bowl, I don't know how he walks away from that. I don't.
Exactly. But, yeah, man, it's just – I always loved going against him because that's a guy that, like, you know, I know Bears fans hate him. But, like, you got to respect a guy like that, just how good he is and how he approaches the game. You know, like, there's nothing that he can't do on the field. He can run. He can throw on the run. He can throw in the pocket. He can drop dimes whenever he wants to. He can get sacked 7 times like he did in that one Seahawks game, like, in 2013, and then still throw for 400 yards and 4 touchdowns. Like, he is one of those guys that, like, you got to respect him as a competitor. And I feel like if you don't, you're missing out. You know, I know he's destroyed the Bears since his time there. But you got to respect him as a player and as a quarterback.
Corey, I tell you, I'm just glad we drafted Cedric Benson. Whoops. No, the thing about Rodgers too is, yeah, he's the guy I love to hate. And we've done it on this pod previously. I think when we played him last time, I think he's the most talented physically, mentally quarterback that I've ever seen. Maybe not the most decorated or prolific in terms of Super Bowls and stuff. He's the most talented I've ever seen. And the one part that I always think about, going back to your time, you're playing against them, is he'll still say it, is that he feels like his greatest opponent, the one that gave him the biggest, the hardest challenge and the most mind games, was Urlacher. I mean, he says that freely. And Urlacher picked him off, I think, like 3-4 times throughout his career. And so I think that adds a little extra mystique to that Bears-Packers rivalry. And, you know, maybe another chapter will go into the books this weekend, and maybe that chapter will also open up a new chapter to maybe a coaching staff and maybe something else moving forward in the future. Corey, we've got to get out of here, man. Stick around next week, listeners, because we're playing the Minnesota Vikings, and we're going to do another story with Corey, and Corey is going to do the Brett Favre story. We're going to you're gonna walk us through the play. You're going to walk us through what happened. You're going to walk us through where we're at with the movie rights right now.
right?
Ending with Brett Favre just on the poster, just like lying down with you standing over him. We're going to do that next week. Thank you so much for tuning in. Today's episode of Believe in Bears was brought to you by BetOnline.ag. 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. How can you say no to that when you use promo code BELIEVE50, BLEAV50. Also, today's episode brought to you by LightboxJewelry.com. Great offers right now for the holidays and beyond. So happy to have them as a sponsor. Corey, man, we'll see what happens, but then we'll be back early next week with the post game, and then look forward to the Minnesota Vikings. Still a lot to look forward to. Still a lot of Justin Fields to watch. So plenty of reasons to tune in. Corey, man, take us home.
Yeah, man, another exciting week of football. I know the season hasn't gone the way we wanted to, but Bears-Packers doesn't get better than that. Lambeau Field, Justin Fields is back, so hopefully he'll have a strong performance. We need to get the running game going, take the pressure off him, work some of those play actions, get him comfortable out there, right? These last, you know, 5 games of the season, I really want him to get comfortable going into next season. I want him to set his precedence out there and let the league be known, you know, kind of like how it was after that Pittsburgh game, where people really started to notice what he can do. And I think he's special. I think there's some people that really haven't bought into it yet. I think they think, oh, he's okay. I think it comes down to game planning, coaching. And I think next year we'll have both of that. And yeah, I'm excited for the future for him. You know, I really am excited for what we're going to see from Justin Fields. So, you know, hopefully this week, you know, he can come out there, have a strong performance, use his feet, you know, when he needs to. You know, don't be afraid to use his feet. And then, hey, if he can go toe-to-toe with Aaron Rodgers, even despite if they lose, I think that would be a strong performance. I think it would give Bears fans some hope about the future, that the future is bright in Chicago. So appreciate you guys' support. And, yeah, you can follow me at Corey Wooten, at Corey Wooten, C-O-R-E-Y, W-2-O-2-T-O-N, Twitter, Instagram, And yeah, hopefully we can break down a Bears win. We'll see.
Hey, man, I would love nothing more than that. Check me out on my socials at Joey Sports Guy. Like and subscribe to the podcast because the season might be a little bit up the track, but there's still plenty to watch, and we're going to bring it every single week right here on Believe in Bears. Thank you so much for checking out this podcast. Be well, be safe. Please be good to each other. And remember, this weekend, it's Bears-Packers. You got to bear down. Got it.